In a switch of roles, the DA's office found itself in the defendant's chair on Friday in district court to explain why it failed to charge Denver Deputy Sheriff Brady Lovinger with attempted murder, second-degree felony assault, and a hate crime. The decision that absolved the Denver District Attorney's Office from responsibility to prosecute came through Friday evening. The statute of limitations to charge for those crimes ran out that day. In 2012, Anthony Waller appeared in court before Judge Doris Byrd to discuss his charges of assault and kidnapping. During Waller's appearance, as per one version of a courtroom video, Deputy Lovinger appears to grab Waller from behind and slam him into a courtroom metal post of a wall.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to object to this. If I'm under investigation, I thought the investigation came first and then the rest came.
Right. But they have 3 days.
Get on your feet. You don't turn on me. Get on your feet. Where's the taser?
I can't move.
Get on your feet.
Oh, man. Get on your feet.
His attorney, Kim Padilla, said in a Tuesday press conference that Waller suffered several serious injuries, including damage to his teeth, a laceration to his head, and a hernia. Denver District Attorney Mitch Morrissey failed to appear in court. His deputy attorney, Douglas Jackson, said in court that Deputy Lovinger was justified. Courtroom observers expressed that Deputy Attorney Jackson dehumanized Waller and minimized his injuries. Darren O'Connor of Boulder.
He presented that he looked at all the testimony. That testimony consisted only of all the other sheriffs in the rooms. He expressed without questioning that he had not asked the judge who was present when Waller was thrown against the wall for her position or her statement. He was told by the judge today that it seemed that he was only listening to the sheriffs and that he could have had that information available to him. Also, Jackson from the DA's office shared that he also very much dismissed the injuries that Waller, who he was very clear to refer to as inmate Waller every time he mentioned his name, he said that getting a laceration to the scalp or the skull does not constitute serious bodily injury. But in the end, he very clearly stated that it didn't matter to him whether inmate Waller, as he described him, had lost teeth or suffered an SBI, serious bodily injury, because what mattered to him, Jackson, the DA, was whether or not there was intent to cause bodily injury. He claims that the sheriff in this case was trying to control Waller and that Waller tripped and fell on his own and fell against a glass wall.
The level of Waller's injuries was significant to determine because a second degree assault charge requires serious bodily injuries to prosecute. After hearing the judge's ruling about the second degree assault charge, but before hearing Judge Martinez's inconsequential assessment of the failure of the DA to prosecute for third-degree assault, Waller stood up to leave the courtroom, immediately being surrounded by deputies, one of whom came in physical contact with Waller, which provoked a response from a courtroom observer, quote, "Don't touch him," unquote.
Mr. Waller did something just before the judge finished announcing.
Elizabeth Epps, herself an attorney.
He stood up and I was so scared. I thought they were gonna, because the two deputies came right up on him touching him and I just knew they were gonna take him that, but he stood up slow. Mr. Padilla said that the client was waiving his right to be present. He exited the room. He didn't want to hear anymore. I'm speaking for him now. But he sat there for 5 hours. He smiled. He'd been pleasant with us. He got up and left and walked out with dignity. And it just was such a man move. Remember the 60s, where the black men marching with the signs that said, "I am a man"? That's what I felt when he walked it out of that courtroom. You got shackles on my feet. You got a waist chain around my belly. But I'll be goddamned if I sit here and listen to the rest of this bullshit. I don't even know what to call it, but I felt for him in that moment. But the dignity with which he walked out of that courtroom at that moment.
The statute of limitations to charge even for the lesser crime of misdemeanor third-degree assault also ran out 18 months ago. The judge later gave his opinion that the DA's office failed the people of Colorado by neglecting to charge the deputy with third-degree assault. The community reaction followed the judge's announcement. Those who spoke to KGNU after the hearing said that the judge's assessment that the DA should have charged the deputy with third-degree assault left little relief to those who have maintained a critical eye on the office. Alex Landell was beaten by Denver police in 2009 and received a large settlement for his injuries, but the officers responsible were two law enforcement officers who have avoided being charged with crimes for their actions.
We saw that the district attorney was speaking with the deputies who didn't even interview the judge. Let alone the victim. I mean, that's standard policy, as we've seen with the OIR report that's recently come out. But to not even interview the judge in the courtroom, that's ludicrous. And then to go through this entire process, a 4.5-hour process, about how potentially, for the first time in Denver's history, we might see a charge of excessive force or homicide by law enforcement on a person of color, to bring the community here and keep us on our toes to this degree is entirely disrespectful. And then we can wait 3 years, exceed the statute of limitations for a misdemeanor charge, and then come to rebuttal 2 days before the statute of limitation expires for potential felony charges, and then to slap us in the face the day of expiration. How is the community supposed to feel? It was ruled as a misdemeanor because, essentially, this man is susceptible to orbital fractures in his eye, as if the damage caused to this man, he was more prone to that with the amount of force he hit the back wall with. They said that because they didn't have any physical images of protruding bone or something that didn't make them think that he had sustained a serious bodily injury, that felony charges for assault were impossible. They agreed that misdemeanor assault would have been acceptable and misdemeanor hate crimes would have been acceptable. However, we've exceeded the statute of limitations on both. And what does that do for the community? This allows another deputy who Elijah Diggins was here. We saw him. Most of the deputies, the high-ranking deputies, were here because what this does is this demonstrates how deputies are going to be able to treat inmates moving forward, what they will and will not be able to get away with. We have had over $10 million in settlements come out of the jail in this year alone.
Waller's attorney Kim Padilla responded to media after the hearing.
We didn't get any justice today. As far as it's a responsibility to do anything, it's the district attorney's responsibility. They're the elected official. They should have brought charges originally. Any person, whether you're got legally trained or not, looks at that video, and that's a jury that's going to ultimately look at it, says there was a crime committed here. This man didn't do anything to justify this. The judge verified that. The judge turned the complaint letter into the chief judge, and the chief judge filed a complaint. The whole system is broken. The district attorney says, well, I would have got information about this and I could have reevaluated. All that had to be done was the Internal Affairs Bureau investigated. They investigated. They found that Deputy Lovinger committed various offenses and violations of the rules and regulations of the Denver Sheriff's Department. Did they reevaluate this? No, they don't care about that. They don't care about a prisoner like Anthony Waller. What they care about more is protecting the system. And the fact that the district attorney's office has never prosecuted anybody for any excessive force case in 12 years speaks volume. That's where there's been injustice. And it's not, and Mr. Waller, I saw that the statute was running. I asked the DA to do anything. They don't even bother picking up the phone or responding. They don't even, you know, answer a letter. They don't answer an email. They don't answer because they think they're above the law, just like the officers. And they give that impression to everybody that they're above the law. And that's why they act with impunity and do acts like this right in front of the courtroom and for the world to see. And they know there's nothing's going to happen. They get a 30-day suspension a year and a half later, and that's the end of it. The criminal justice system is not a deterrent to law enforcement use of excessive force. It hasn't been and it won't be.
Recourse for the community. There's a whole crew of upset community behind us.
The recourse for the community is to carefully examine, I guess, who the district attorneys are that have this power, and also to go to the legislature.
Kim Padilla, attorney who brought the complaint against the DA's office for Waller, said that the decision was also a failure of the Colorado legislature when then District Attorney Bill Ritter, who later became governor, moved for legislation that led to the district attorney's advantage.
The statute in question right here could be changed. Ritter, about 10 years ago, went to the legislature and got that statute changed, and so that it was more favorable to prosecutors. You can go to the legislature now and change the statute to make it more favorable to the citizens that are abused by failure to prosecute people for crimes.
Irene Rodriguez, KGNU, Denver.